Hello, and welcome to Outnumbered, the podcast. I'm Audrey.
And I'm Bonnie. We are experienced moms to a combined total of 19 children.
In our weekly episodes, we explore relatable topics using our perspectives of humor and chaos.
Tune in for advice and encouragement to gain more joy in your parenting journey.
Hey, everybody, we're back. And this time we have jumped through the platform 9 3/4, and we are in Harry Potter world. We're talking about house rules. Oh, wait. but we are going to share each our three, like basically our top three practical rules that you might want to consider for your homes. And we're going to share why these have become our top three.
Yes, yes. And of course, as usual, we like to start with a little bit of humor. And I didn't come up with a specific instance, but I cannot tell you guys how often I will have a young child ask me why about a rule, right? Which makes sense. Like we say, well, actually our rule is we don't do X, Y, Z. We don't jump on the couch. We don't do this. We don't hit our sister, whatever. And the cute little 2 or 3 year old, but why? But why? Which is understandable unless it's something, except for when it's something super basic and you'll find things coming out of your mouth as a mother that you would never otherwise anticipate saying, things like, we don't put our toothbrushes in the toilet before we use them. But why? Or we never lick our brother's shoe. Why? So I would love to hear those. If you guys have had things come out of your mouth that you never anticipated saying, come share them over on Instagram. We'll share some of our favorites too, because
yes,
oh boy, they're hilarious when you have to explain things that you never thought you'd have to explain to a tiny tyke.
Oh man. So we decided to do this episode because we thought, like, who, unless you're coming to visit our house, why do you really care what our top rules are? But we have come up with these three and we want to share them because these are sanity savers for us. You guys, we have by trial and error discovered some things that make our lives super much easier. I can't even find words to tell you how much we like these rules and how, because we have large families and we've got so many kids, we kind of have these just as our basic top three rules that everybody knows and they're never questioned. And we want to share them with you because we think maybe they could help simplify your life with kids too.
Yeah. And we decided to stick with household rules, meaning like logistical stuff. Obviously, there are relationship rules that we have and spiritual rules and that sort of thing. But these are mostly logistical kind of housekeeping type stuff.
Right. Like if you came to our house, you would basically be expected to follow these rules.
Right.
They're not just family rules. They're
right.
People rules.
Right. House rules. And another thing to say is as you go through life with your own children, you will probably develop your own top 3 to 5 rules that are kind of intrinsic to your household. And they will largely be dependent on what your children try to get away with, right? Like sometimes kids come to my house and they never even try to break any of these rules. And other times kids come over and that's the first thing they do. And I'm like, oh, nope, no one told you this is actually our family rule. And if I had other kids, I'd probably come up with different ones. So, you know, you get to decide, but here's just a couple ideas to get you guys started. So one of our number one rules is there's only eating in the kitchen, the dining room, or outside. And I had not even really realized that this was such an important rule to me until I went to a friend's house a couple years ago. And a kid came out of the kitchen with something in his hand, food, and she rattled it off. She said, how did she say it? Kitchen, dining, outside. Kitchen, dining, outside. It was like this mantra that just got repeated. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's our rule too. But we had just not made it this repeatable thing that she did. And the second somebody walked out a few minutes later, I know, kitchen, dining, outside. And out they went to eat their popsicle or whatever. But that's really important to me. And mostly because of the amount of people we have. Now, when adults come over, I do allow adults to go have a bowl of ice cream in the living room because I know the adults will not dribble their spoon across the couch like this and then roll around in it. So kids do delightful things with their food, especially when they're done with them. And so I've just learned that that is not a mess that I want to deal with.
Hey, if you have an adult doing that at your house, I want it on video.
They are no longer invited over, FYI.
Oh my goodness. That would probably solve the spills all over the rest of the house that we have. I just the other day moved, like I kind of had this, you know, general rule. I guess I didn't know I had it either. But the other day I was looking for something and I moved the bench in our homeschool room And underneath the bench, somebody had spilled hot chocolate, and it had, like, they cleaned up what was in front, but there was like hot chocolate under the bench. And I was like,
sticky, gross.
Who snuck this in here? And why am I having to clean this up now?
Yeah.
That's a really good rule. I can totally, totally go along with that one. I'll obey that one when I come to your house or my kids.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Well, you actually don't have to, but your kids do.
I'll make my kids do that at your house.
And what I've noticed specifically about this rule is that I do enough housekeeping and like follow up, even with this rule in place, I'm still corralling them back in, like herding cats back into the kitchen with the popsicles or whatever, that it's hard enough. If I just completely let it go, it would be a disaster. And I've noticed two things: that when we allow food in other rooms, it damages property very quickly, right? Like someone spills something on a couch and it doesn't get cleaned up in a timely manner, or there's wood that got water spilled on it and it sat there for a long time. So it's very easy to destroy things with food and drink throughout the house. And the other thing is, it can become a health hazard quite quickly when someone leaves a piece of steak under a bed. Like, we don't want that kind of grossness going on at our house. There's enough gross things with a bunch of little kids running around. So,
Okay, time out for a humor segment. I had one kid who had to, I may have shared this on the podcast before, but I had one kid who didn't want to finish their plate at supper one night. And I said, you need to sit there at the table until your food is gone. And a couple of minutes later, said child brought plate, clean plate into the kitchen. I was like, oh, good job. You decided to eat the rest of your food. Good job. You can go play now. And then about a week later, we started to smell something. And my husband's sensitive nose tracked it down to the register, and she had opened the register and scraped the spaghetti down the register and put the register back. And so
ingenious. Smart girl.
But it was the dining room, so I guess it wouldn't have been against the rules.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, not technically outside of the dining room, I guess.
Oh my word. Okay. Our like number one rule is pretty similar, or one of our top three rules is pretty similar to that, and kind of for the same reason. But one of our hard and fast rules is no shoes upstairs. So this rule came about because in the downstairs of our house, we only have hardwoods, and upstairs we have carpeting. It's all carpeting except the bathroom and laundry room are, you know, hard floors. So, and we put in, when we did this house, we put in an expensive wool carpet. And so it's a very expensive carpet, and it's harder to clean because it's wool. And so that's where the no shoes upstairs rule originated. But I'll get into more about why we don't have shoes upstairs. But that's like my hard and fast rule. They've got it. By the time they hit the stairs, usually their shoes are off, and that's no shoes upstairs.
Smart. So smart. Yeah. A similar rule to us is we do try to keep shoes at the door a lot. We don't have the mud that you guys probably have in the Midwest, but we have a lot of dirt. There's just dust and dirt everywhere. And so kids are tracking it in all the time. We have, side note, we have tile most of our main floor, but we do have some, what's it called? Like synthetic wood at the door. And it, when it's freshly mopped, it's beautiful. And then as soon as somebody walks across it, it's got those dusty footprints, because that's just what kids are tracking in all the time. So I love that rule. Keeping shoes corralled where they make the least amount of mess.
Yeah. Yeah. So this, the idea behind this, the like general overarching thing, is kind of preventing messes before they happen. Like about every year or two, I rent a rug cleaner, a carpet cleaner, and I go get it, rent it, bring it in. And I tell you what, if you want to feel like a really terrible house cleaner, go rent a rug cleaner and clean your carpets.
And then pour that water out in front of everyone.
Yeah. And then after that, then you can feel like an amazing house cleaner, because you have just gotten like, you know, mud soup out of your carpet and it's not there anymore. But if I didn't have this no shoes upstairs rule, I would have to clean my carpets with the rent the cleaner and clean it on a way more regular basis. So this is kind of like cutting down on my own workload. It is just mommy has so much to do. I can't be shampooing the carpets all the time. And so like, it's a respect for the work that we've done. Like I mentioned, we put this expensive carpet in when we restored the home. So we bought a home that was 100 years old and we're restoring it. And it's like just respect for the age of the house and the restoration work that we've done and caring for this home. So like the big picture is that this house is 100 years old and we're trying to respect it and care for it. And then the daily picture is like, we take our shoes off before we go upstairs, so mommy doesn't have as much work on a daily basis. So that is the why behind our no shoes upstairs rule.
Yeah, I love that. I love that you brought in the respect aspect, because let's be honest, we all want to raise children who are respectful to each other, to other human beings, to animals, to property. No one wants a child that just rampages through their life leaving, you know, trash in their wake. But in order to teach that, we have to have some basic rules that teach respect for property, respect for each other. And in this instance, they're doing both. They're both respecting the property of your home, you know, the investment you have made in this carpet, and also respecting mom or the older sibling's time or whoever would be in charge of cleaning up this floor when there was a mess made. And unfortunately, you have to teach them that respect before they can actually learn why they're doing it, right? You have to teach the 3-year-old to take the shoes off before he or she is old enough to scrub that carpet and know just how hard it is to fix that problem. But eventually they learn that if they don't do it when they're out on their own, they're going to be the one cleaning up their own mess. And it's a lot less fun than letting mom do it. Okay. So moving on to our number 2 rule, and that is that everyone contributes to the household. And this is, again, a pretty basic one that you might not question until you have a child who resists, or you go to a household where the children do not contribute. And it, with a household of our size, it's really, there's really no other way to do it. It's a necessity, right? I would have been dead years ago from overwork if I was the only one doing everything, not to mention super bitter and cranky all the time, right? So being a part of this household economy, we have a chore chart that we update regularly, but everyone knows that they have something to do to keep things running smoothly.
Yeah. Side note, Bonnie shared that chore chart with our Patreon fans, and it's pretty awesome. So if you support us on Patreon, you get access to that kind of stuff from us too. But isn't that interesting how you can have a whole flock of children and you kind of get one that, like, you see their different work ethics in there, how they just come out naturally, how one will have like a want to help, a desire to help, and they just want to. In fact, my sweet little 5-year-old the other day was saying, I just play the glad game. And her older teenage siblings were laughing at her. They were like, is this like Pollyanna? What's the glad game? And so we call her and we're like, hey, what's the glad game? And she's like, when there's something mommy tells me to do that I don't want to do, I just say, I'm so glad that mommy asked me to do something, and I do it and I'm glad. It's so sweet. So you get this little, like some will have a natural desire to help, and then others have found that they can kind of just slink through the middle of the crowd and be in the room that's being cleaned and not really doing anything to help with the cleaning. So you're dealing with all sorts of like work ethics and personalities. And so, yeah, that is a great rule to have. Everyone contributes.
Yes. And if you want your child to grow up to be a contributing member of society, they have to be a contributing member of your household. And you guys, this is not easy. I'm sure many of us grow up thinking, well, as soon as my kids get bigger, and then they can contribute a little bit more, and then my load will be lighter. Yes, but also no, because guess who gets to teach them how to clean? You do. And guess what the cleaning looks like until they learn? Really subpar, right? So there is a lot of work involved. And I guarantee you that it is a lot easier in those early years to just do the work yourself. But if you want that payoff later on, you'll have to do the hard work of insisting that they contribute. And you'll get kickback, and you'll get kids saying rude things like, you only had us to be your slaves. That's right. You contribute so much that I had you to be my slave. Correct. I will bring that one back to you when you're 35 and have children of your own.
Because sometimes having a kid do something is actually harder than just doing it yourself, because you could do it better and faster.
Yes. Yes. And so just acknowledge that, and know that you, what you are putting into your children will eventually pay off for you and for them and for your children's in-laws and for your future grandchildren and on and on. So my why behind this is because I want to raise contributing children who not only take responsibility for their own messes, which is like bare basic, right? We should all at least take responsibility for our own issues, our own messes, but also learn to contribute simply because there's work to be done. So this is another tricky thing, right? It's kind of two levels, right? Most moms, I think, at least try to get their kids to clean up after themselves, but to contribute to a mess that they didn't make, that's kind of higher level stuff. And that is really required in households of our size. Because very often there are young children that have made a mess. And I've heard my older kids multiple times say, well, I didn't make that mess. yeah, neither did I, son. Let's work together and get it done. It still needs to be cleaned up, and the 2-year-old's not going to do it. So let's work together simply because there's work to be done.
Yes, that is such a good reason to teach your kids something else that you're like, it's dual teaching. You're not only teaching them the thing you're teaching them, but you're teaching them a higher thing. It reminds me of our episode that we did, 158, on entitlement, helping your kids not be entitled. And I'm pretty sure in there we talked about volunteering and teaching your kids to do things for others just because it's good to help others. And it helps them think about, you know, being entitled. For example, we have this graveyard that we mow and help keep up. And we were finished doing it the other day. And one of my sons said to me, my 10-year-old, he'd done the push mowing that day around the gravestones. And we were on our way home and he says, "Remind me again why we do this." So it was a good opportunity to talk about, you know, things that need done and things we do for others and thinking about, you know, in the future, who's going to mow around your gravestone and, you know, that kind of thing. So just contributors to society, that kind of thing. Our second rule, one of our top 3 rules, is very similar to that. And we call it 4 o'clock afternoon chore time. And so every day at 4 o'clock, we clean the house and we all have jobs. We have assigned rooms. I think way back in one of our early episodes, we talked about kids and chores, and I explain a lot how we do it in there. But at afternoon chore time, everybody gets up, stops what they're doing, gets up, and works together to do an afternoon chore time. So same idea, cleaning. Everybody contributes and working together.
Yeah, and I have always loved that you guys have a specific time because there's no excuses, right? It's not like, well, I was going to do it when I got back from this thing and but it's nope, 4 o'clock, everyone stops what they do. And there's something really powerful about family work, especially as homeschoolers. You probably read or researched a little bit about this, but when everyone's working together, there's just this feeling of camaraderie and of fellowship that you really, really can't be beat and can't be replicated in any other way.
Yeah, that's our total why, is togetherness. And the reason the 4 o'clock time came around was because pre-COVID, my husband worked outside of the home. And that was a way to get the house clean before daddy got home. So kind of like a respect thing for daddy as well, you know, a nice clean home for him to come back to. But we work together and we play together. We do hard things, we produce things together, and we have fun together. It's like setting up a family standard and upholding it together. So we work towards something we can all be proud of and we can show others. Like, you know, with definitely there is the thought in it that, you know, if somebody came by so first it was daddy, you know, let's have a nice home for daddy to come home to in the evening after he's been working hard all day. But, you know, if you want to invite your friends over, if we want to have somebody over for dinner, the house is trashed and we can't do it. But if we've had, you know, when we have afternoon chore time every day and regularly, then it's presentable and it's a place we can be proud of together because we worked on it together. And we have something to show for it together. So 4 o'clock afternoon chore time. Definitely love the everyday clean and the bigger message that it stands for.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So I want to share something about clean homes, but I want to, with the caveat that if this makes you feel bad about yourself, then just ignore it. Okay. But I'm going to say this. There are 2 things that contribute very strongly to whether a child will have the motivation to keep a clean home when he or she grows up. One is being taught how to clean as a child, and the other is being exposed to a clean house as a child, right? So I don't know if there's research of what matters more, but in my experience, those 2 are the most important, both contributing to the household and also witnessing a house being clean. Now, if that makes you feel bad about yourself because your house is never clean, just fast forward and move on to the next rule. But I just say that because as we work together and can see the result of our hard work, then your children become acclimated to, this is the way my house should look. So they grow up, they become an adult, even if they're naturally more of a messy person, in the back of their mind, they're like, my mom might have something to say about this. Like, this is not the natural order of things. The natural order of things is chaos, we know, but rather this is not how things should be. We should clean up because it makes me feel better. And it shows respect for our possessions. It shows respect for the people that come to visit. So that's really powerful to just give them access to that clean home. And if yours is never clean, find a friend who has a clean house. Go hang out at their house for a while.
Yeah. Maybe that'll work. That's right. Right. One of my thoughts on instituting afternoon chore time, which I do want to make a note that I couldn't do this until I had kids that were big enough to help. Mm-hmm. Like if you have 3 toddlers, you know, kids under five, you're not going to have an afternoon chore time because it's just going to be you cleaning
then
the house
you wait
while
for
they
the
follow you. Yeah.
Yeah. You wait for husband to come home and you guys clean it up together. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But one of my thoughts on instituting as my kids got older was I don't want my kids to think that I'm okay with this level of dirtiness. So if at least once a day we get the house clean, then once a day, at least they've been exposed to a clean house.
Yeah. I got another humor segment for you. My son was assigned to give a little talk in church on Sunday, and he was playing around with a few humorous lines to kind of rein people in. And one of the things he came up with, he didn't end up going with this, but was, my dad loves to play and have fun. He can make anyone smile. My mom, because it was on honoring your parents. Okay. My mom loves a clean house. She can make anyone do a chore. Like, thank you, son. Happy Mother's Day.
Yeah, maybe choose a different humor line for Mother's Day.
That was a good one. Yeah, that was a good one. He's not wrong. I'm pretty good at that.
Yeah.
So our number three rule is a pretty hard and fast 8:30 bedtime. Now, for the 12, 13 and up, this doesn't always apply, but pretty much for anyone under 12, it is a hard and fast 8:30 or before bedtime. If you're a baby, you go to bed before that. But the reason this has been so essential for me is because we all know what that feels like to be mom all day long, right? If you're a stay-at-home mom, you can be just overwhelmed and exhausted so quickly. If there wasn't an end to my day, it felt like I was just being run through the ringer 24/7, right? But for me to be able to say 8:30 is when everyone is in bed, then we knew what to prep for. And I'm sure most people have bedtimes, but it was just one of those things, especially not quite so much anymore, but especially during those years when most of my kids were young, I knew that by 8:30, it was going to be my time off, right? Barring some sickness or whatever. Anyway, it was so essential for my sanity, especially in those early years.
You have influenced me to have an earlier set bedtime as well, because I noticed as well that the later it got in the evening, the crabbier I got. And I was pretty much, you know, like the worst parent in the world by the time I finally got my kids in bed. And that wasn't the way I wanted to be sending my kids to bed every night. So definitely this one of yours has influenced us to have a similar rule, so that mom can still be nice when she's putting you to bed at night.
Totally. And you know, we've all heard the importance of transitions, right? When our children get up, when they come home from school or friends, when they go to bed, those transition times are really pivotal in the connection they have with their caregivers, with their parents, and in their mental health. And so if we are always just mom monsters in those times, that's kind of detrimental to their development, right? Again, not a thing to feel guilty about, but maybe ask yourself, how can I be a better person at bedtime? That might mean you delegate it to dad 5 days out of seven because you're just done and you can't handle it anymore. It might mean you go for a walk at 7 o'clock while dad puts everybody in their bed, in their pajamas, and then you come back from the walk and you are fresh enough to have a lovely bedtime with your kids. You might choose to do read alouds in the morning because by 8:30 you are done and you don't want to do any of that. But just ask yourself, how can I make this bedtime routine a little bit smoother so that I am not a monster, right? And that was definitely some of the reasoning behind this. Again, we still have lots of little kids, so we have held on to this one for a long time, but my older kids have grown out of it. And there's something about having an end time that just makes you realize, oh, just a couple more hours and I can make through.
I really like this rule. And I have one more suggestion for making bedtime easier for you. If you have an older kid that can read, have them do the bedtime story at night, because that's like working on the sibling relationship and they're practicing their reading. There's a lot of benefits in it. Maybe gives you 2 minutes in the bathroom to brush your teeth by yourself so you can get a few breaths to come back in. And yeah, that's another one bedtime thing that we love, is just having one of the older kids read the bedtime story. It doesn't have to be mom or dad.
Yeah, I love that. My 3-year-old has taken to asking for made up stories, which are not my forte. And so in comes the 14-year-old, hey, time for bedtime story. And he makes up some highfalutin bizarre story of wolves chasing each other through the forest. And my kid loves it. So win-win.
I am also, for a creative person, I am also like lacking massively in being able to make up bedtime stories.
Yeah. It's probably because your brain is done by that time. Let's be honest.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So our third rule, it sounds like one of these big overarching family rules. And it is, but it's also a practical rule. And our third rule is respect for prayer. And the way, and there's two, this kind of is a dual thing that both can be boiled down to respect for prayer. So it shows itself in two ways. number one, nobody eats until we give thanks for the food. And then the second way that it shows itself is if somebody is praying, everybody else is silent.
Oh, this is such a good one. And I'm so glad you brought this up. This is actually something that we have been struggling with, because as the family has gotten larger, in the early days when we had three kids, yes, everyone was sitting there, heads bowed, everyone was silent. And we've kind of gotten a little bit lax, because by the time everyone sits and bows head and is silent, it's like 20 minutes later, I'm starving. So I personally have gotten a little bit lax. Like, as soon as everyone's quiet, I just kind of go, even though they're still elbowing each other. And my husband has come down, you know, brought down the hammer and said, no, we are being disrespectful, right? If we believe that we're really praying to God, then it's time to show some respect. So we've cracked down on this one, and I'm really grateful for that.
Okay, so this is like practical for us, because, well, here's a little story to illustrate how hard and fast of a rule this is about not eating before we give thanks. Is one time we had a visitor at our house, and they were walking through the kitchen, and they grabbed a chip out of the bowl as they walked past, and they, you know, stuck in their mouth, and like as everybody was gathering in, and all the kids were like huge wide eyes. They were like, oh, and this visitor looked around and they said, oh, you don't do that, do you? And I was like, well, it's actually kind of a family rule, because if everybody, you know, just grabbed a chip out, right, then there would be like a whole half of the bowl gone before we give thanks. And because there's so many of us, and like that was very, you know, you could see. So it's kind of a practical thing. But then it's also about respect. This is another way about respect, that it is for God that we're thanking, giving thanks for our food. And, you know, another practical side of it is it's about appetites and nutrients. Like, I have to know, like, if my three-year-old is allowed to eat out of the bowls while I'm putting them on the table, then I don't know how much he's eaten. And I don't know if he should clean off his plate, or he's already eaten half a plateful before we even gave thanks. Like, so if the general rule is nobody takes a bite until we have given thanks, then I can monitor how much my little ones are eating, right? So it's kind of a practical thing for me too, and make sure they're getting enough nutrients and all that. But the bigger picture, of course, is noticing that somebody is praying, like awareness of around you, and then respecting that they're working on the most important relationship in their life. And just a respect for that is something that we definitely have as a rule in our family.
Oh, that's so good. Yeah. And I love that. I mean, this is probably the reason if you who are listening do say prayers at mealtime, this is probably one of the main reasons you do that. And that's to stop the hustle and bustle of life, focus on the gratitude, connect with the divine before you go stuff your face, right? So makes sense. And to actually get everyone to be quiet and respectful in that time is a challenge. It really is a challenge, but what a gift to be able to give them. And then imagine them at a dinner party later on to be able to, you know, focus themselves instead of just reaching out and helping themselves whenever they need to, whether there's a prayer offered in the future at a party or something or not. At least in their mind, they know this is when I have a moment of gratitude before, you know, taking care of my own physical needs.
Pretty powerful. And it also will like show them some manners that you don't just start diving in and grabbing out of bowls. Like in this house, wherever you are, what is the proper protocol here? And how can I be respectful of that? And so then they don't embarrass themselves. Oops, everybody else is waiting to pray, and I just grabbed a handful of you know, whatever.
Right. Or even, you know, conversely, they're out on their first date at a restaurant and need a little gentle reminder that we wait until everyone has been served and we let the ladies go first rather than just diving in, right? That is one of my pet peeves, is those kinds of bad manners at the table. And I have one child in particular, bless him, who is young enough and voracious enough that this child has a really hard time waiting and a really hard time not just plowing things in his mouth every time he sees it. And I'm really grateful for this practice, because hopefully little by little he will learn that, well, we put pause on our appetites until we have said, okay, let's do it. That's a powerful lesson. Anyway, so these are our main three rules. You guys, we probably could have picked three or four or five or six other big ones, but we wanted to share these with you because these three for each of us bring so much order and stability to our lives. And again, a lot of it is practicality, because we have so many people in our homes. But even if you have one or two children, I promise you that if you instill some hard and fast household rules, it can help bring a lot of order and joy to your life too.
Yes. And as we say in so many of our podcasts, if you just be intentional about what you teach your kids. Whatever your rules are, just be intentional about them. And then you're not only exposing and teaching your kids some really good lessons, but you're letting them know that in life, people have rules and you need to be respectful of them. And so in your own home, it's wise to respect your parents' rules. And when you have your own home, you get to establish your own rules. And when you go to your friend's house, they have some rules too. So just to be conscientious of just some good behavior in society is definitely a good thing to teach your kids.
Yeah, absolutely. Two other things that just came to me. One is, if you're struggling to figure out what these rules should be, ask yourself what bothers you the most, right? Is it shoes all over the house? Is it mud in the corner? Is it crumbs in the couch? And maybe you can form your rules around those things that are the most bothersome. And second, be sure to stick with just a few, especially if your children are small. You might be tempted to have the 10 commandments of your household, but stick with two or three until those are really ingrained. And then you can maybe add on later on if necessary. But the smaller, the better, because then there's no question about it. These are the household rules. I'm Bonnie.
I'm Audrey. And we're outnumbered.
Thanks for listening, friends. Click the link in the show notes to subscribe to our email and never miss another episode.
Show us some love by leaving a review on iTunes or sharing the podcast with a friend. Thanks for all your support. We'll talk to you next week.
Quick question about the ending. Do we want to say this is Bonnie or do we want to say I'm Bonnie?
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah. And then we say we're outnumbered together, right? Or do just we alternate whoever's
there. Yeah, I think whoever's the last one. Then we don't have to try to get it together because I think we'd probably...
That'd be more awkward than what we do right now.
Totally. We'd have 5 outtakes. anyway, we can finish some final thoughts. I just thought.
Okay. Yep, go ahead.